Hey guys, my name is Amy Coonan, and I am a millennial on a mission to eat, clean, cook, dress, and live more sustainably. It's because of that I'm also the host of The Town Hall, Rubicon's first and only podcast where we share sustainability stories from the industry's influencers and the biggest brands. Jam-packed with tips, tricks, and need-to-know info for those that want to do better for the planet but may not know where to start. We are covering it all. Last year, we spoke to some incredible people who are doing some incredible things for our planet. The executive director of the Leonardo DiCaprio Foundation, the CEO of Seven Generation Cleaning Products, and one of the brains behind environmental sustainability in the NBA. This season, we're kicking it up a notch. Don't forget to download and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or iHeartRadio so that you don't miss a minute. And if you can't catch us on your commute or you don't download directly, don't stress. You can check out our website at rubiconglobal.com/townhallpodcast for recaps, reviews, and all things Town Hall. Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Town Hall. As we all move forward, we have been stuck for like 2.5 months now, and it's a really weird time in history. But The Town Hall is staying dedicated to telling really important sustainability stories. And when we're lucky enough, we get some really massive brands. This episode is one of those lucky ones. Today, I am actually joined by two guests, Christy Jones and Liz Soper from National Wildlife Federation. Earlier in the year, Rubicon was named the official sustainability and tech partner for Recyclemania, the competition under the management of the NWF, but we'll get into all of that. But Christy and Liz, thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you.
I've only done multiple guest episodes, like once or twice, so let's just establish a little bit of order for answering some of the questions. Honest truth, besides my husband and my dog, you two are the only people I've interacted with today, so I'm a little overexcited, and I don't want all of us to fumble words over each other. So Liz, let's start with you. Tell me a bit about your role at NWF, a little bit about your professional timeline and how you kind of got to where you are. And then in that timeline or in your story, what do you think sparked your passion for environmental sustainability? And then Christy, you're on deck and I'd love to know the same for you. So we'll start with Liz.
I am the director of pre-K to 12 education for National Wildlife Federation. I have actually been with the Federation for most of my career. I'm going into my 24th year. And I really started off in a regional office and did a lot of regional education work. And for the last 11 years, have been focusing my efforts on the national level and really pushing forward the work that we do with schools and other informal education opportunities and communities. My background, actually, my undergraduate degree was in wildlife biology and forestry, and I started off as a wildlife biologist. But kind of a fun, interesting fact is I found I had a lot more fun talking, and I feel like I made a bigger impact talking with people within the community that I was doing my research in or collecting data. You know, like the nighttime bar stool chats where we were talking about grizzly bear habitat and what it meant to, you know, maintain and keep that habitat healthy and the ways people get involved. So that's somewhat how I moved from that into education and got my master's in education in Oregon. And then pretty much, except for one other job with the Lake Champlain Basin Program doing watershed education, I've been working for NWF. And, you know, my passion for this work, I think really stems back from my childhood. I was lucky enough to spend every single summer in a place called, Greensboro, Vermont, which is in the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont on Caspian Lake. It was my grandparents', cabin, and my parents would just throw us out the door every morning. We'd be gone all day. We'd be catching crayfish and swimming. At night, we'd be catching, you know, lightning bugs and watching shooting stars with my grandparents. And it set the stage for my wanting to be able to pass this passion on for nature and the environment and to also protect it.
I love that. Christy, you're up.
Sure. Yeah. So I have been with National Wildlife Federation for several years as well. I think I'm going on, I started in 2003 at National Wildlife Federation. So I guess I'm going on my 16th, 17th year. And I've worked in higher education programs. So I manage higher education programs at National Wildlife Federation, working with colleges and universities, working with them to help them advance their efforts on campus sustainability, like renewable energy, waste reduction, habitat restoration, green purchasing, that sort of thing. And I've done that since the entire time I've been at NWF. We also, in our program here, we also help college students, young professionals develop leadership skills and also learn more about career opportunities. So career development, to learn what their opportunities are in the conservation field or their opportunities are in learning about sustainability and sustainability skills so they can bring that to whatever career field sector they choose to go into after they finish school. So I believe, you know, similar to Liz, I grew up outdoors playing all the time, spending all day in the summertime. You know, we would be out as soon as the sun was up and we'd come home, you know, as soon as it was starting to get dark. I grew up camping. You know, we would go to the closest national park to where we grew up was Shenandoah National Park here in Virginia. And I still live in this in that area. So we go to that park all the time. It's beautiful. And so I take my little girl there as well. So just growing up, we spent a lot of time outdoors. I really enjoyed seeing wildlife and spending time and hiking and going to the beach and searching for seashells and that sort of thing. When I graduated college, actually a little bit before I graduated college, I went on a trip to Andros Island, the Bahamas, and it's a family island in the Bahamas. And I went to a field station there, a biological field station. And that is where I spent the next 6 years of my life after college, as I worked at the field station. So I worked with college students and high school students, helping them learn about ecology and learning field skills and that type of thing. And that really helped me really understand the value of hands-on learning. So, you know, whenever you, education is, you know, there's sitting in the classroom and learning, there is value to that. There's also value to being out in the field, learning skills, you know, the experiential part of that. And so when, after that, after I left the field station, I worked for a nonprofit for a little bit in the environmental security sector. And that really looked at conflict around natural resources. So water, timber, diamonds was another example. And that, you know, that was looking at conflicts most likely, you know, outside the U.S. And then when I started looking for a new opportunity, I was really attracted to NWF's education programs. We have a very large education program at National Wildlife Federation, engaging little kids all the way up through adults. And so that is kind of what got me hooked at NWF. And I applied for a job on the campus sustainability team. And so I've been here since 2003.
That's awesome. Okay, so I will let you guys now kind of field these and answer, you know, whoever wants to answer what, and build upon each other's responses. And we're going to focus a lot on education and recycle mania, but, you know, the NWF is a massive umbrella brand for a lot of different environmental conservation causes. So I did want to do a little bit of background about the mission, you know, the strategic plan, the six pillars, kind of what makes the NWF, and then we can get into the specs of the educational programs. So whoever wants to field kind of the overall NWF mission answer can just go ahead.
Great, Amy. I'll go. This is Liz again. And, you know, the mission of NWF is really to unite all Americans to ensure that wildlife thrive in a rapidly changing world. And there's no doubt in all of our minds these days that our world is rapidly changing, whether it's with this pandemic like we're facing right now, or the fact that more than one third of America's fish and wildlife are at risk for extinction, or the climate crisis. And of course, all of these impacts, what the impacts are on many of our marginalized communities. So, you know, recently, and I just wanted to mention this because I think it's really important, and it really sets the stage for who I believe NWF is, particularly right now. And it was our CEO, Colin O'Mara, who recently said that we need to be leading this charge with compassion you know, during this time, because this pandemic is clearly showing us that there are many structural inequalities in our society, such as access to clean water, food, healthcare, or the impacts of pollution. So I've always thought of NWS as being a very compassionate organization, a very diverse organization, a middle of the road organization. We can cross the aisle. We've got bird watchers, we've got hunters, we've got anglers, we've got red and blue. And so, but overall, you know, again, it's this mission of really uniting all of these diverse folks together to ensure wildlife thrive and ensure that people as well are healthy and taken care of. Our strategic plan really focuses in on three main areas, what we call pillars. Where I believe, and Christy can tell me if this is right, I believe we're in the fourth year now of a five-year strategic plan. So we're already starting to think about how we're going to be moving in the next 5 years forward. And of course, that's going to be very different probably than we thought it would have been 3 or 4 months ago. But currently, you know, our strategic plan focuses on these three areas. And the first one is protecting and restoring and connecting wildlife habitats. So in order for wildlife to be healthy and survive, they need places to live. They need places to raise their young, places to find their food, their water, their shelter. And in looking at this, you know, NWF is looking at full landscape scale approaches to conservation. So not just really small individual areas, but big pieces of land, knowing that, you know, many of our wildlife species don't have borders. They don't know the border between America and Mexico or Canada or even between states. So looking at habitat from a pretty large area perspective. We're also looking very closely at creating healthy watersheds and water, coastal areas, starting to look at creating living shorelines as we address the impacts of climate change. And as well, which is unique to, I think, NWF in some ways, is the concept of, you know, protecting, restoring, and connecting wildlife habitats isn't just aimed at working with professionals and state agencies. It's also working with communities. So we have a very large Garden for Wildlife program. We work with individual landowners. We work with full whole communities. They're all certifying their wildlife habitat. And so they're part of the engagement and the work that we're doing under this one pillar, particularly in urban areas where wildlife, even creating micro habitats help them survive as they migrate through or try to live in a very congested area. The second pillar is transforming wildlife conservation. And this is really, again, to work on trying to stem and reverse the decline of wildlife in the United States. So we need to do more than just protect and improve the habitat that they depend upon. We also need to really manage existing wildlife populations, really work to focus on stabilizing their population and recovering those species that need the extra help. So in this pillar, we're really working more closely with state and federal wildlife agencies, with other organizations that are doing work on the ground, and as well in Washington, looking at policy and lobbying for funds to help support this, and really advancing a more progressive 21st century wildlife management agenda. And the third one, which really speaks a lot to what we're talking about today, is connecting Americans with wildlife. So in order for our work with wildlife to have an impact and to be successful, we really need to educate and engage people in the work that we're doing, as well as providing opportunities for them to be involved, for them to become empowered and take action in their own communities. So this includes programs like we're going to speak to, Recycle Mania, and as well Eco Schools. And our goal is really focused on connecting people to the environment, to wildlife, to nature, you know, so they can see the value, they can understand how important a healthy environment is, both from an ecological, social, and economic viewpoint. So those are really the three main categories that we're working under right now. And we have, over the last year or two, really started to look at these areas very closely with the lens of equity and justice. So again, looking at how our work can help support marginalized communities, and there's a lot that needs to be done on that end.
That was like the perfect transition into our Recycle Mania stuff. You should co-host this with me for a living. You know, like I said at the top of the show, Rubicon and NWF have partnered to be the official technology partner for Recycle Mania, but we need to define that. So let's talk about Recycle Mania. You know, what is Recycle Mania? How was the idea brought to fruition? Talk about the competition a little bit. Whoever wants to field this one to really kind of give us the backbone on Recycle Mania.
Sure, I can do that. This is Christy. So I'll start a little bit about answering what is Recycle Mania. So Recycle Mania, it is a program. We're celebrating our 20th anniversary this year. So the program started in 2001. And the core component of Recycle Mania is an 8-week competition where colleges and universities compete to reduce their waste and increase their recycling. And we have many campuses that are also working towards zero waste on campus. And so what that means is we have schools that will, we have community colleges, we have 4-year colleges, private colleges, state colleges, a diverse group of higher education institutions across the U.S. We also do have a few schools from Canada that participate with us every year. And so what they'll do is they will compete for 8 weeks during the spring. And some of the category opportunities for them are diversion. And if they participate in that category, they'll report on their total trash, total recycling, and total food organics. Schools also have the opportunity to only focus on food organics or only focus on recycling if that is of interest to them. We have a couple category opportunities for campuses that have advanced waste reduction programs. So they're looking at zero waste. And if schools participate in that category, they're really looking at not just their trash recycling and food organics, but they're looking at their materials for reuse as well. And we ask schools to do waste audits because that's a very great learning opportunity for students and staff to kind of learn about what is being thrown away and maybe some options to make sure that that doesn't go into the trash dumpster and go to the landfill. This year was a little bit different because of everything that's going on with COVID-19. So there was several early campus closures, but the competition for 2020 was really successful. I'll get into the kind of the impact from the competition, this year's competition, in a few minutes, but just to kind of close that thought out. So for this year, because we had schools starting to close down and go online early March, we hosted the competition for 5 weeks, and we still had a really great competition and had some really great feedback from campuses. The competition is also a really good time. It's, again, 8 weeks in the spring. It's really great opportunity for campuses to try out new strategies. Depending on what their goal is around waste reduction, they can try out new strategies, whether that's, you know, introducing reusable items on campus, moving recycling bins around. Maybe it's solely on education and awareness. Maybe it's a special focus on incoming students. So it's a dedicated time for them to try out new things. And many campuses have participated in the program for years. So what they do is then look at their data from previous years, you know, total recycling percentage, that type of thing, or, you know, looking at their zero waste. And they have that data that we keep for them for the competition, and they can compare it year after year and see how they've improved, and then also identify areas for improvement. Now, with our partnership with Rubicon, we were so excited that this worked out for us. One of the things that our campuses, you know, all of our colleges and universities that participate in the program, they're committed to reducing waste and increasing their recycling. And the technology that Rubicon develops can only help advance those efforts. One of the biggest challenges right now for campuses, not just campuses, but cities, counties, government, state governments, and others, is really looking at the contamination issue. So that has been a big issue that has been in the news for a couple years now. Campuses struggle with it as well, just really ensuring that recycling the proper materials are going in the right bin and they're clean. So what the technology, some of the technology that Rubicon provides can really help with that. Rubicon, the technology, it provides solutions to help campuses kind of learn about what's being thrown away on campus, and then really similar to looking at their stats each year, it helps the schools identify what their areas of improvement are, because that's what it's all about, learning what's not working and how to improve it. One of the specific apps that we are featuring for our colleges and universities this semester is called Rubicon View. And what that does is it can track different locations on a campus where trash and recycling bins are located, for example. And for a large campus, that can be a lot. And what the schools can then use that app for is, you know, they have the app, they have their locations on their device, and they can make notes about each of the those locations. Like, is there a contamination issue? Is there overflow? And, you know, that might signal that more bins are needed. Is there, maybe there's different items being put into the bins when there's a, you know, the proper bin is right next door. And so that, again, would signal maybe there's a need for more education and awareness around that. So that is one of the technology apps that we are piloting with some schools. We actually launched the pilot this spring, and we're going to continue that pilot in the fall once students and staff are back on campus. There's also another app I wanted to quickly mention, which I thought actually was the coolest when I learned about it a couple months ago. It's called Rubicon Flash. And what you do is you take a photo of your trash bin or your recycling bin, and it breaks down the contents of that. And so then that can help you again, look at contamination, because that really is one of the biggest challenges for schools. And it's a great educational experience because it can help students and staff understand what's being thrown in the bin. And again, figure out are more bins needed? Is new signage needed? More, maybe a broader education campaign is needed, not just physical signs, but through the website, through social media, maybe integrated into freshman orientation, for example. So we were really excited about the opportunity to partner with Rubicon for this year's competition. And we are actually hosting a webinar in June to talk a little bit more about the software technology that's available for colleges and universities, so they can kind of learn about how those tools can help them with their waste reduction and zero waste goals. And I think what I'll close out with, Amy, is I just wanted to talk a little bit about the Recyclemania 2020 impact. I didn't want to jump to that too soon. But like I said, we did finish off the competition. It was a very successful year, even though schools had to close a little bit early. And it was kind of surprising, you know, because I was in contact with all of the schools this spring and just said, we want to be as flexible as possible. If you're able to continue to participate, please do so. And so many schools were just responded and said, we're so happy. We really appreciate the support. We appreciate the opportunity, because they wanted to finish out the program as well. So like I said, we finished off in early March. And once we closed all of the numbers, we estimated that we reached about 4.5 million students and staff this year during the competition. And those students were at about 300 colleges and universities in the US and Canada. They recycled, donated, and composted 48.6 million pounds of waste. So it was still quite an impact this year. So we were really excited about that. And then we estimated of that waste, there was about 380 million plastic containers that were kept out of the landfill. So we definitely call this spring a win for the program. And like I said, Recycle Mania, we started in 2001, so we're celebrating 20 years this year. And we have a big change for the 2021 competition. We are changing our name. The new name is called Campus Race to Zero Waste. So we announced that name a couple months ago, but continue to use the name Recycle Mania through the spring competition, simply to avoid confusion. You know, like I said, the program's pretty old, and so a lot of schools are very familiar with the Recycle Mania branding, but we're really excited about our new Campus Race to Zero Waste name. And we're going to open our fall registration for the 2021 competition with that name, because it really does reflect the direction we're headed and really helping colleges and universities work towards zero waste on campus.
Those numbers are so impressive. So cool. You know, I did not need to plug our tech. That was organic. And, you know, we've talked a lot about college campuses, but I think, and I know you guys agree with me, sustainability education has to be integrated more in the preschool, kindergarten, all the way up to high school senior experience. You know, Whitney Houston said it best, the children are our future. And before we can get to college campuses, we have to do a lot of stuff in the elementary schools and the middle schools and things like that. You know, I'm currently very pregnant with my first child, and we've been having to look at preschools. That was something I never thought I'd have to do, was look at a preschool before I had a baby. But, you know, we see things in these preschool curriculums, and I don't see a lot of sustainability education. It's never too early to research all that kind of stuff. And I mean, we've been cooped up for like 70 plus days now. And the end of the school year, like you guys were talking about, you ended your competition in March, have looked very different this year than anyone could have imagined or envisioned. But I do think it's really important to highlight some of the other work in sustainability and environmental conservation education you guys are doing. I do want to talk for a couple minutes about EcoSchools USA, you know, some of the framework and how you guys get K through 12 students to engage with your programming. And then lastly, in this section, I do think that we would be remiss if we didn't take the opportunity to talk about, you know, this virtual learning experience that parents and children alike have been going through for the last several months. You know, what are some ways that kids can learn more about their environment, either digitally or in their backyard, but, you know, from their homes?
Sure, Amy. And this is Liz again, and congratulations. That's really exciting. Yeah, I have two girls, and one of them is actually back with me. She's 25, just sort of trying to deal with this pandemic as best as she can, because she was in Boston. So anyway, there are two of us working here. With a young puppy, so that's fun. But I'll take a shot at obviously speaking about our EcoSchools program, which is really for NWF. We consider it our umbrella program for a lot of the education for sustainability work that we do at NWF. And just to be clear, EcoSchools is actually a global program. It was started by the Foundation for Environmental Education in the 90s. And so the U.S., here in the U.S., National Wildlife Federation applied for and became the host in 2009. So we've had the program running since 2009. And since that time, we've got about 5,600 schools across the country. Every state is engaged in some capacity, schools are, that are registered. And we've got over 200 schools that have really risen to the level of our highest award achievement, which is the green flag. So this program is really an education for sustainability program. It provides schools with a very flexible step framework that they can address, in this case, in the United States, 12 different what we call pathways or issues of sustainability. So consumption and waste is one of those pathways: energy, sustainable food, transportation, watersheds. These are all different issues that schools can take on. And schools come to the EcoSchools program in many different ways. We do work with some really large school districts on a district level, like New York City and Miami-Dade, Fairfax County, Virginia, Houston, Texas are just a few examples. And we work directly with the district to provide professional development to the teachers, to support some of the work on the ground. NWF has field offices across the country. We've got, I believe it's 6 field offices and then some more targeted offices like in New York City. So we do have staff on the ground that support schools through this process. But what I've always loved about this program is the fact that it's very flexible. So there's these 7 steps. The first step is really creating a team, what we call an eco-action team at a school. And the team should be student-led. And that's what I find is key to this program and really any environmental education program at a school, is that the kids are really leading the process. So in the eco-action team, you're going to have at least 50% of the team should be students. Obviously, when you're working like with preschool kids, which we do, there's got to be a lot more adult support. But creating that team is the first step. And then the team really decides, depending on what the curriculum is, what the goals for the school are, what they're actually seeing as some of the issues that they want to address, they take on one of these pathways of sustainability. And one of the first things they do is collect data. They assess the issue. So, for instance, if they were doing the consumption and waste pathway, they would take a look at what they're recycling. You know, how much of their trash is actually, trash could actually be recycled. How much of it really needs to be thrown away? How much of it could be composted? And they collect this data and then they take that and they create a plan of action. So different steps, and usually starting with some of the low hanging fruit ones of what they can implement to really make a change on the ground in their school. The other step, key step, is really evaluating and monitoring their success. So going back and maybe redoing an audit or an assessment to see if they've made changes and had success with the program. And then 2 other steps can really be integrated. I consider them integrated throughout the whole process. One of them is integrating the work into the curriculum. So that's where we work directly with the teachers to ensure that this isn't just an additional program that they have to implement at school, that the kids are actually learning about issues that they normally would be in their curriculum, but they're addressing it through authentic learning opportunities, either utilizing their school facility as a laboratory or even going outside and using their school grounds to determine biodiversity. So things like that, as well as engaging the community, is a key step in this process, breaking down the school walls, bringing people in from the community to help support the work being done, and actually, having the kids take their learning outside of the schools. We've had kids who've learned how to do energy audits and have gone out into low-income housing and worked with elderly folks to actually provide energy audits for them. So, really breaking down those walls and engaging the community. And the last step is really what I consider celebrating success, coming up with a mission statement and an eco code for the work that you're doing. So the flexibility of this 7-step framework really, really allows schools to come at the sustainability aspect in many different ways, which is really, really exciting. There's so many different topics they can choose. They can decide to only do one aspect of like gathering data on energy. They don't have to do a complete energy audit at their school. So the flexibility is definitely key. And it's also an award program. So we provide them with the opportunity to be awarded for the work that they do. And Christy may be able to speak to this more than I, but FEE also, the Foundation for Environmental Education, has expanded their eco-schools work to include campuses, higher education, and NWF is planning on pushing this forward as well.
That's so awesome. I mean, I think it is so important that we tell these stories and that we talk about these resources that are available. These programs have been around for so long, but people may not know the origins of them. A lot of our listeners are millennials and those that have been involved in programs like this, you know, when they were growing up, but may not have known why they came to fruition. So it's very cool to hear that story. This has just been like such a nice, relaxing quarantine treat for me to record this with you both. But I did want to play our rapid fire game before you go back to saving the planet and I go back to making my like 1,000th loaf of banana bread. I'm going to ask you both 10 short, appropriate rapid fire questions. And you just say the first thing that really pops into your head. Since Liz kicked off the interview, Christy, you'll answer first. And then Liz, you'll answer the same question after. And then we'll go on to the next one. You ready?
Ready.
All right. Ready. What was your first concert you ever went to?
New Kids on the Block.
Liz?
Rush in Montreal.
What does your morning routine look like?
I get up early. I work until my daughter wakes up and then I get her breakfast.
I actually go right for the coffee, get my coffee, sit on the couch and read the New York Times on my phone.
What is one movie you could watch over and over again without getting sick of it?
Star Wars.
Oh, wow. That's what I was going to say. I'm a total Star Wars fan too. We've been rewatching all of them.
What is one eco-responsible action that you make sure to do every day?
I am a very good recycler and we use reusable napkins in our house.
I would say recycling is definitely key. There's some days when I really don't want to rinse out that peanut butter jar and I make myself do it. So, yep.
Where's your dream vacation spot?
Oh my gosh, that is a hard one. Well, you know, maybe not. I have always wanted to go to Belize and snorkel with the whale sharks. So that's my dream.
My dream vacation spot is where I just told you I spent my childhood. It's Caspian Lake in Greensboro. I'll go back there any day. Yeah. Even as an adult.
What's your favorite type of candy?
White chocolate.
I don't eat candy.
Liz,
I'm allergic to chocolate. I don't eat sweets. I do love ice cream. Of course I'm from Vermont, so I love Ben and Jerry's ice cream as long as it doesn't have chocolate in it.
You know, I was looking at my questions and that was like one of my backups. And I think I just am in the mood for candy. So I just decided to ask you guys about that. What has been the silver lining of your quarantine thus far?
That's easy. I have spent so much time, quality time with my daughter. We have about 2 acres of property in Virginia, in Northern Virginia, and we have just a lot of beautiful trees. Everything's blooming right now, and we have a creek. So we spend as much time every day going for walks and watching things bloom, and she gets muddy and falls in at least once a day. So that's definitely been a silver lining, spending more time with her.
And we're on the same track. I mean, I never would have expected to get my 25-year-old back, you know, living with me for a period of time. And I'll have to go through the whole empty nest syndrome again when she goes back to Boston.
If you could be any animal, what would you be and why?
I would say, I'll probably say some type of marine mammal, like a dolphin or a whale, because I just think it would be awesome to be able to swim in the ocean miles and miles and, you know, never get tired.
And I would have to say a hummingbird. If you've ever watched these birds, their wings and how rapid they are and just they've got a lot of spunk. And I'd love to be a hummingbird. I think that'd be great.
What are you binge watching right now? What are you watching?
Oh, gosh. You know, I don't get very much time to watch anything that I want to watch. But we probably Frozen 1 and Frozen 2. We have been watching every day for a very long time.
Yeah. And for us, we've been watching Outlander, The Good Place, Schitt's Creek. They're all good ones that we've been enjoying.
Yeah, we're doing Schitt's Creek. Lastly, what does success mean to you?
So success, I will take that as a question for personal and professional life, I think. So I will feel successful in my personal life. I want my daughter to grow up healthy and happy and to enjoy the outdoors and to find a job in whatever she wants to do so she's happy and has fun. I think professionally, I really enjoy working in the conservation field, and I just want to continue to work with people and help them learn more about conservation and make changes in their life so we're doing our best to protect wildlife and habitat.
And I would say success for me, particularly in the work-related field, is when I see these kids that have been involved in our EcoSchools program or some of our other work that we're doing with them, and I see them become leaders, and I see them take the learning and they bring it home, they take it into their communities, and they take it to whatever the next step in life is, so that, you know, we know we've made a real difference, that they're going to take that on. They're going to, that's become part of their values, and they'll continue to be empowered to do that work.
Okay, it's shameless plug time before we go. If people want to learn more, find virtual resources for their kids, donate, or get involved, where should they look to find y'all?
Yeah, so in terms of the virtual stuff that we've been doing, we really had to pivot and put a lot of this stuff online, although we obviously have a lot of really good resources to begin with. But if they go to the EcoSchools website, and if you can just, if you just Google EcoSchools USA, it'll take you to the website. A shadow box will come up and it'll take you directly to our new page that has, it's called our virtual classroom page. And it has all the different activities, lessons, virtual field trips, our new YouTube channel. They can find everything there. And Christy, you might want to add too whether or not they can get recordings from the Eco Conference or Eco Leaders, which is also great resources that are online.
Right. Yeah, I was just confirming. If you go to nwf.org, in top hand navigation, there is one of the options is educational resources. So if you click there, there is a variety of resources, and there is an option for education programs. So you'll be able to find resources for the Recyclemania program, our Eco Leaders community, which is for college students, high school students, and young professionals, as well as our career development resources as well. So nwf.org is got a lot of great stuff.
Perfect. Thank you both so much for coming on here, highlighting all of the amazing work that NWF is doing. And, you know, on behalf of Rubicon, we are honored to partner with you guys. And on a personal note, I don't know if I shared with you, but I'm also expecting a daughter. And it's just very cool to spend some time this afternoon with two badass moms in the sustainability field. And it was very inspiring for me. So thank you both again.
Oh, thank you.
Yep.
And good luck.